The following program is presented by Hanson McLean.
It's time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson. Pat McLean is off today, and we have David Schauer is in here in his place. Of course, David Schauer is our Hanson McLean's Chief Investment Officer, and so, Dave, glad you're with us on this.
Yeah, good to be back.
Yeah, it's been, I think, a little while since you've been on here. So Pat McLean is back in New York. He went back this week for, there was, Investment News is one of the publications that, it's like an industry rag. I imagine most industries have their publications that people in within the industry read. Investment News is probably the one of the larger ones. And Investment News this week had a special dinner to for awarding other investment advisors with community service and their work with nonprofits, profits, and all that sort of thing. So I think we had mentioned it briefly last week, but Pat went back to this dinner, and Pat won the Community Services Award from Investment News. It was a big deal. I mean, several hundred people, fancy ball and all that sort of stuff, a lot of big names there. Sean Harvey, another one of our individuals at Hanson McLean, went back to be there, but it was actually a very nice award, Community Service Award. Pat McLean has actually, he's been working with the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services for 30 years, started out volunteering in high school.
That's pretty amazing.
It's probably been more than 30 years, actually, because he was in high school when he started doing it, and he's been on the board for 15 years and chairman for the last 5 years.
I was going to say, was that a shot saying 30 years ago in high school? Because I think that would have meant he was putting in a few extra years.
That's why I think it's maybe a little more than 30 years. But anyway, so that's why Pat's not here. He was out of New York. And
very nice grant for the Sacramento Food Bank coming from that.
$20,000 grant for the Sacramento Food Bank. And it's I think it's a nice thing. This is Investment News has been doing this a number of years.
I think we have several thousand people, I think.
At that,
had put in kind of their hat for their own charity, I believe.
Now, Pat did not want to be nominated because it was about a year ago within the organization. There's something said for nominations, and Sean Harvey and the organization said, I think Pat McLean would be great to be nominated. And Pat says, no, please don't. And the organization decided to nominate Pat anyway. And so it was.
He was told about it a couple weeks back.
Yeah, so he probably was. Yeah, I don't think he knew he was even nominated, but he's one of the finalists. And then they asked for some video and stuff. And of course, Sacramento Food Bank—they've moved from a central location to they distribute food in the communities, and it's mainly the working poor they work they serve. And something like almost 70% of the food is fresh food. They've really moved to this. You know, kind of the whole farm to fork thing.
Right, yes.
Same
yes.
thing in the in
well, that community. Run to Feed the Hungry is coming up, and that benefits.
That's right. So anyway, so Pat's not here because we have David Schauer, and David Schauer is Chief Investment Officer at Hanson McLean. And if you've got any kind of real in-depth investment questions, today would be a good day to ask those, and we'll put David on the spot. So if you want to join us here at Hanson McLean, the contact number is 921-1530. Again, that's 916-921-1530. You can also send us an email, questions@moneymatters.com. And I thought it was a big week. I thought this, I don't know how closely you paid attention to this whole Scottish vote. I thought that was an interesting thing because had they voted to become independent, it would have had many rippling effects. I think
sure.
The European markets would have had a big sell-off as a, but it's kind of a landslide. I think 55% of the voters said, nah, we're sticking with. And they opened the voting up to age 16.
Yeah, which, that's pretty amazing. But yeah, I would agree. The ripple effects when you start talking about creating their own currency and what removing themselves would have meant. Definitely yeah. Dislocations that.
And I don't know why 16-year-olds. I have a 16-year-old. My 16-year-old son was actually canvassing for a congressional race that's happening. Last weekend, going door to door, and it just so happens that I'm supporting the opponent.
Really?
Yeah. I'm like, what's going on here, son?
That's great.
I thought so too. I think he thought it was his old man would have a problem with it. I'm like, hey, I want you to grow up with your own thoughts and opinions, not just mine. I mean, there's plenty of room for some discord here and that sort of stuff. Anyway, so but we did see the markets continue to move higher. The Dow Jones closed at another barely up, but yet another record high. And so as the chief investment officer,
it does
Hans
continue
McClain,
to grind higher recently.
And when you say grind, what do you mean by that?
It's just a methodical grinding, slowly, almost, I don't want to call it painfully, but defying, I think, what, I don't want to say necessarily conventional wisdom would suggest, but continues to move higher in the face of skepticism. Let's describe it that way.
Yeah, and it's been so long since we've had even a 10% correction.
Yes.
I mean, a number of years since we've had even a 10% correction.
Right.
Which usually happens about every 9 months. So we haven't seen that. And, I mean, it's been...
2011, we had a couple corrections, 10% or greater. And since then...
Did it hit 10%? Barely.
Yeah, in 2010 and 2011.
Okay. So it did hit 10%.
12, 13, and so far in 14.
Did the Dow as well or just the S&P?
S&P.
Yeah, I don't think the Dow did. But anyway, if it was 10%, it wasn't much deeper. And we certainly haven't seen a 20% correction since the financial crisis.
Right.
And we've seen stocks almost triple since that time. Of course, Friday we had the IPO of the Chinese, you're smiling, Alibaba or whatever.
Uh-huh.
That
comes public at about a market cap of $230 billion, give or take.
Yeah,
is that amazing?
$230 billion. I forget what the multiple of their revenue
was.
Well,
they had $8 billion in revenue.
$8 billion in revenue.
I believe, yeah. I didn't look that closely at it. I was fascinated, though, at, you know, it's already one of the world's largest companies.
And the thing that's the most fascinating, and if you had bought some stock yesterday, I hope you understand this, you don't actually have an ownership stake in the company itself because Chinese firms are not allowed to be owned by foreign investors according to Chinese law. So you basically have some rights. You have stakes to some earnings, but you don't have the traditional ownership where you can vote the board or vote out the board. It'll be really interesting to see. Of course, the founder and everybody has a vested interest to see that things go well, obviously,
sure.
and go well for foreign investors. But the foreign investors don't even, in fact, have a position in the company.
It's truly amazing how large this company is when it came public, or as of yesterday. Truly shocking.
Yeah, and a lot of people bought the stock, and we'll see what happens. It's just starting to feel... The longer this goes on and you get companies like this, it's just so reminiscent to me of companies back in the late 90s.
There aren't the sheer numbers right now, meaning the number of companies.
Yeah.
But,
and they actually do have, and it is a well-established company. There's no question about it.
Right.
A huge e-commerce company. Its revenues are a fraction of what Amazon mm-hmm. are, but the market value is now bid up greater than Amazon.
Quite a bit greater.
But of course, Amazon doesn't earn a profit either. It just keeps, yet the stock price keeps going up. That's what's a little interesting about some of these companies.
Oh, yes.
Whether or not they're actually going to be able to generate some earnings to justify their price. But it is not quite the same. You're not seeing pets.com and
right.
a bunch of other business plan on a napkin that... isn't really going to go anywhere. So, but anyway, we have a kind of a special program today. We're going to talk a little more in depth on portfolio construction. How do you design portfolios? How do you look at measure risk and duration on fixed income and a lot of these sorts of things? Do we have certain kind of investments within taxable accounts or within tax deferred accounts? How do we rebalance? When do we swap out a particular mutual fund, and et cetera. So we're going to go a little deeper in the weeds than we might typically do on this program with David Schauer, the Chief Investment Officer. And of course, we'd also like to take your calls if you want to join the program or you got a question for us. To join the show is 916-921-1530. Again, that contact number is 921-1530 or send us a question, an email at questions@moneymatters.com. And I'd love to take your call regarding anything on your investment mind. So we'll get into, when we come back from the break here in just a moment, we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty on portfolio construction. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
The financial world is much more complex today than it was a generation ago. It used to be that all one needed to do was park their money in a high-yielding bank account and live off the interest. Those days are no more. With interest rates so low and the world so unsettling, it is now more important than ever that your retirement savings is managed with a focus on both return and downside protection. That's where Hanson McLean comes in. Hanson McLean has been serving folks for over 20 years, helping them achieve their financial and retirement goals. Plus, Hanson McLean Advisors is a registered investment advisory firm with the ability to choose from thousands of investments, both commonplace funds as well as less-known offerings. If you haven't seen what Hanson McLean Advisors can do for you, I encourage you to give their office a call and schedule a visit with one of their advisors. They have offices conveniently located in Roseville, Folsom, and Sacramento. Contact them today at HansonMcLean.com or 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson, Pat McLean is off. He's in New York City this weekend after receiving his Community Services Award for the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. Very proud of him. So we're here with David Schauer, our Chief Investment Officer at Hanson McLean. So David, what are some of the, and we're talking a little more in depth today on investments and portfolio construction and the markets. And of course, if you've got a question about the markets, that sort of thing, 921-1530 is the number. What do you find, David, is what are some of the more common questions or common concerns you're hearing from investors today?
I think right now, I think I get quite a few questions regarding fixed income as well as stocks. But I think if we start with fixed income here, I think people have a lot of concern in that area. And I guess maybe just starting with the potential downside. Typically, people kind of extrapolate the downside in equities and kind of apply that to all asset classes in a sense. And so I guess it's starting with how to define what the downside maybe is in your fixed income holdings.
And of course, fixed income is another term for bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And there is concern now with interest rates as low as they are, right?
Absolutely.
And people buying long-term bonds or even intermediate-term bonds, people buying some bonds today or bond mutual fund. The
really concern, just having to stretch for income, right? Because in shorter-term instruments, you just can't generate any yield, any income.
I mean like a one-year CD?
Correct.
Pays almost nothing?
Exactly.
I feel like you're going to have to write the bank a check to have the privilege of keeping parking your money there.
Yes,
there's no income. It's a huge challenge for someone who's been retired maybe 20 years, someone who historically had lived off CD interest today that pays next to nothing. So they're looking for alternatives. So that's in part has been why people have bid the prices up on fixed income.
Yes.
So what are the kind of questions you're receiving right
now? Well, you could see it across the board. You could see it in really all securities within the fixed income market. And obviously there's relative value within the bond market. The bond market is an enormous market. So
how does the bond market relate to the size of the stock market?
In terms of the actual, it's much, much larger. Off the cuff, I don't know the multiple, if you will, or the true magnitude, but it is quite large.
Larger than the value of the stock market,
yes.
Of course, yes.
Yeah. And I think oftentimes people are usually focused on the treasury market when they're kind of hearing, especially when the media talks about risk in the bond market, they're oftentimes referring to the treasury market.
And the treasury market's about a $17 trillion market because that's about what the debt is for the U.S. government, right?
I would say...
a little less maybe.
Yeah.
16 and some change.
And less maybe the Social Security quote-unquote trust fund, but in terms of tradable securities. But it is a very, very deep market, so it's very liquid. Pricing is very relevant, if you will. There's not a whole lot of guessing in terms of price and interest rate where you get, you know, other markets, if you will, where the discovery of price may be more difficult because the market's just, frankly, not as deep, not as liquid. So anyhow...
You hear reports every day on the 10-year treasury is at 258 or whatever the number is currently.
Right.
That's reported every a lot of the news programs along with stock market. So what is the relevancy for the typical investor on that?
And I think the 10-year treasury is a good barometer for many asset classes, because a lot of asset classes, whether it be real estate, whether it be mortgages, whether it be other fixed income or bond investments, or really any sort of cash flow oriented investments, tend to base themselves off of a spread between themselves and the 10-year U.S. Treasury, if you will, the 30-year mortgage as an interest rate on a 30-year mortgage basically trades off of where the 10-year Treasury is.
Yeah, so every fixed income security is compared to what the rate is on a 10-year treasury, right?
I don't know that I wouldn't say everyone, but there are many things, there are many income, either producing or debt instruments that are within our lives that base their price, and price being interest rate, relative to the 10-year treasury. And a 30-year mortgage is one that is pervasive, obviously, in society. And there is a certain spread that the 30-year mortgage trades at over a 10-year treasury, and that tightens and that widens day to day. And
the spread is really the difference between the interest rate on compared to the 10-year treasury and the interest rate on what other type of fixed income product.
Exactly. And so you could apply kind of the same sort of comparison in the high yield bond market. The high yield bond market are synonymous with the term junk bonds.
These are typically smaller companies or companies that have don't have the best credit rating. They have to pay a higher interest rate, just like the average person who doesn't have a good credit rating would have to pay a higher interest rate.
Exactly.
Sometimes they have great quality companies, but just they can't get the financing because they're not that large.
They're not that large. They may have a lot of debt. They may have cash flow that's somewhat volatile in nature. So it requires a higher interest rate. But if you look at that kind of broad spectrum of the market, even those investments are trading at relatively low interest rates. They trade at roughly a premium of about 3.8% over the comparable maturity in the treasury market. So if we take a 10-year, if you will, at around 2.6, you could add 3.8% to that on average for a basket of high-yield bonds, and that's what you'd be receiving on those bonds. And if you look at that throughout history, we got down in 2007 to about 2.3%.
That was the time I remember, and you said, we need to get out of our high yield bonds because we're not getting compensated for the risk.
We had never seen that tightness, if you will, that level of lack of risk aversion, if you will, in the marketplace at that time. And if you just fast forward from roughly April 2007 to the fourth quarter of 2008, where we just said that the spread was 2.3%, that expanded out to nearly 20%. So 2.3% to 20% was the difference in yield. It was simply a change in risk profile, if you will, or the desire for the investor of what the investor required to own that investment in terms of income.
Here's what the interesting thing. It wasn't that we had necessarily that much higher in defaults on high yield bonds. We didn't have this 10 times the amount of defaults, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was just that investors, this is what I think is interesting for people who have portfolios to understand. Investors had just decided, for whatever reasons, we don't want to own these anymore. And there was tremendous pressure to sell these.
Yes.
And the bottom really fell out of the high yield bond market. That's why when you talk about a 20 percentage point spread.
Yes. We're basically talking about if a 10-year treasury is trading at a 2.5% or 2.6% yield today, then a comparable high yield bond at that point in time would have traded at around 22.5% yield. And that there's a lot of reasons for that.
Yeah, so do you remember what the decline was on the high yield bond?
Oh, it was
bad as the stock market.
Yeah, if not worse in many cases. And a lot of times it was due to simply a lack of liquidity. If you were trying to sell, there may have not been a bid on the other side.
No buyers
just
around.
Because the bond market, the way it trades is a bit different. And so if you couldn't get a bid, you just had to, you know, continue lowering the prices. And obviously some liquidity provider, someone there that had cash and willing to buy, just, you know, puts bids in at a very low price, and we're able to transact at low prices. So you know, I think it's Warren Buffett says, you know, there's value that accrues to the liquidity provider in times of stress. And you set the price that you're willing to buy at. And he did that in several other large institutions during that time period.
And of course, so the high yield bond market's kind of on, we really just talked about two different ends of the spectrum, right?
Exactly.
One 10-year treasury, as conservative as you can get, because it's based upon the U.S. government, which is, I know they have a lot of debt.
Right.
They still have never defaulted. They haven't defaulted in 100 and some odd years, whatever. And so, and then the high yield bond market, the junk bond market's on the other end of it. But there's a lot of other kind of fixed income.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what are some things from an investor standpoint, or even things that Hanson McLean do for clients in the fixed income environment?
Yeah, so I think one thing people can look at is the duration of their holdings. And what simply duration is, it's a mathematical formula that allows you to assess really the sensitivity of that particular position to interest rate movements. And I'll give an example. So let's say you have a duration in your underlying holding of 5 and interest rates move.
And duration, essentially the amount of time it's going to be before you get your money back.
It's a calculation that, yes, essentially arrives using cash flows and principal payback to arrive at it. But it's really a sensitivity measurement. So if we look at an interest rate movement of 2%, so if interest rates go up by 2%, you basically take that figure, multiply it times your duration with a negative sign in front of it. And so you would say my portfolio, if interest rates move up by 2%, and there's some other things that obviously have to hold true throughout this, but my potential downside is minus 10% in that situation. So I think that helps people in maybe quantifying the risk in their fixed income securities. Now, it's not as simple as I just said, because you have a variety of things. As we just talked about in the high yield market, you could have had a duration of 5, but the high yield bond fund that you had maybe declined by 40%, and that was a twofold issue. That was the duration risk potentially changing, and actually not so much in the 2008 timeframe, but it was the desire for risk. So investors change from being willing to hold those kind of questionable, and I'm putting that in quotes, securities requiring a much higher interest rate. So just if we're just looking at interest rate risk, you can look at the duration, multiply it with a negative sign.
But you can also have a period of time where, let's say, you could have the treasuries increase by, let's say, 2 percentage points, but you can have other assets, other fixed income not increase by as much. That's spread narrowing.
Correct. Spread risk, if you will.
So, but what kind of spread do we have right now on investment-grade corporate bonds? It's pretty tight
now. Yeah, it's very tight. I mean, if you look at high yields being at 3.8, it's going to be probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 2 and change.
So part of the challenge right now, it's not just that interest rates are low, right? It's that on ultra-safe investments, it's that interest rates are low even on investments that have some more risk and lower relative in a relative basis too.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
That what we talk about, that spread right there, that is a narrow time right now.
Exactly.
Which would lead one to believe that in the next time we have some stress in the economy or stress in the financial markets, you could see whether or not interest rates rise, you can see that there could be that spread increase decline in fixed income.
Yes. So there's two risks in that particular area. And unfortunately, many people have stretched because of the income needs that they require. And I said this, an employee brought a family member's portfolio, if you will, that they were looking at trying to put together, and said, you know, what are your thoughts on this? And I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was giving you the 1 minute sign.
Okay, I don't know that I could wrap up this story, and maybe I'll take it after the break. But anyhow, you're right. You have not only the interest rate movement, but spread risk as well, and a variety of other liquidity risk and so forth and so on that can affect the securities in many different ways. But I think at a minimum, know what you hold, because a lot of people have ventured out further and further and further in the risk spectrum in trying to derive that income that they need without really knowing the true underlying securities and the risk that they do have in that asset class.
And you can see not only individual investors doing that, but there are also some mutual fund managers that, in order to keep their yield high to attract investors, have also moved out on that risk factor and have increased risk in the portfolio
sure.
to generate that higher yield, which is why one of those, it's really, it's not the kind of time you're going to want to just look at the yield of a fund. But anyway, we're going to continue on with some more of this kind of portfolio discussion with David Schauer, Chief Investment Officer. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Hanson McLean's Money Matters has been broadcast for nearly 20 years with one main goal, to help you make wise choices with your money. And what you hear each week on the radio is the same type of straightforward advice Hanson McLean provides to each client each week. Whether you're facing a retirement transition, a 401k review, a portfolio risk analysis, or other financial matter, the advisors at Hanson McLean are here to assist you. Their approach is to first listen to you and then help come up with a plan to provide a greater chance of success in achieving your financial goals. Hanson McLean is an independent advisory firm that chooses from a wide variety of financial tools that can range from investment products with the brand names that everyone knows to specialty investments that are as unique as your individual objectives. They combine these with years of experience and intensive research to help you meet your specific goals. So if you have yet to see how the advisors of Hanson McLean may benefit you, contact them today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit them at HansonMcLean.com.
Hanson McLean's Money Matters back here with you. It's weekend of September 20th. Here with David Schauer, Chief Investment Officer. Pat McLean is back in New York City today.
I'm sure he's tuning in for this.
I said, come on, Pat, you could at least call on the phone and be on the phone or something. Actually, I didn't tease him then. And I think he's going to go visit his son in Colorado on the way home. Anyway.
In college.
In college. Anyway, David Schauer is, of course, our Chief Investment Officer, Hanson McLean. Been with Hanson McLean for...
17 years.
17 years, is that right? Yeah, 17 years. Wow. 17, thank you, David. And it does a great job growing the team. And of course, I think 17 years ago, Hanson McLean, what do we have, 50 million maybe under management? And
it's hard to, yeah.
Maybe a little more than that. Maybe it was 100. A
couple hundred.
It was a couple hundred million. Yeah. Now we're at a couple billion in total administration. And David Schauer oversees the portfolio on that. And so we're talking today about portfolio construction. Risks in the portfolio, looking at fixed income, and we'll talk about equities here in a moment. And of course, if you want to join the program, something on an investment-related question today, 921-1530 is the number to join. So we were talking about fixed income, and there's a lot of discussion on that in the markets today because most people have a better understanding of equities, or at least how the stock market goes up and down, and than they do on the fixed income market, right?
Definitely.
What are some of the things you're seeing when someone is trying to get a portfolio with high yield today? So someone says, I need to generate X percentage.
I think what definitely is concerning is you see people looking to, so the mindset is obviously I need to generate X in terms of a yield based, an amount of cash flow off of the principal that I have.
And of course there's two ways to look at that, right? There is, well, let's say I need X percentage. One is to, let's look from a total return perspective, and let's design a portfolio that has both capital appreciation and some income today.
Yes.
And the second is, let's just focus on, I got to generate X percentage in income. I want to make sure I go buy some securities that generate that amount of income.
Yes. And I see that as being problematic many ways today. And so what ends up happening, and what I've seen of late when people do come in with that sort of idea, is number one, there's a false sense of security in the income that's being paid. So there's kind of this sense that because this is the current yield on the investment, the current cash flow that's being supplied by this investment, that really won't change and can't change. And so I think obviously one thing you have to do is look at how is this income being generated and why is the yield that this investment is generating, why is it so much than the marketplace would suggest in terms of what other investments are paying?
So give an example of a current security that has a high yield on it that would give you some cause for concern based upon the risk that might exist within it.
So I won't give necessarily an explicit security.
Just a group of. Yeah.
So... As I think I mentioned before the break, an employee had come with a portfolio that their family member was putting together for themselves. And I think they're retiring fairly young, but they needed, in their mind, certain income being generated from the investments themselves. So not as you outlined the first way you can look at it from a total return perspective, and then pulling, you know, looking at kind of some probability work and saying, how much can I take from this portfolio given a variety of outcomes? Take that fixed percentage, regardless of quote unquote what the interest or the cash flow being generated by the portfolio is yielding, and what is the success, if you will, of that portfolio. So not that sort of strategy. A strategy
which is really how most pension plans do things, how Hanson McLean does things. And
yes, exactly. So this individual came with this portfolio. Because
if you're just looking strictly for yield, you can't really own anything just for capital appreciation.
Correct. And what ends up happening is, as I was describing, was this particular person had roughly 10 different investments that all owned, if not the same things, very, very similar things, and they were highly concentrated in a couple industries that are very interest rate sensitive. And oftentimes...
And which industries might those be?
Different types of REITs, leveraged mortgage REITs, and so forth. So what ends up happening...
Are there many of these out there, leveraged mortgage REITs?
There were at the time. And then furthermore, there's other partnerships and so forth and so on. But what was nerve-wracking is that the actual yield being paid out was in excess of the earnings of many of the underlying companies. So once again, on its face, you look at this and say, well, gosh, in this particular situation, the person needed to generate like a 9%, which we can talk about that as
fine
as that. Exactly. but 9% relative to the overall portfolio is just unreasonable. I don't know how, you know, which way you cut it. If you expect that that's going to last you a normal life expectancy, obviously depending upon your life expectancy. So anyhow, they own the same thing across the board. And what is definitely concerning is the individual thought that they had a conservative portfolio. And so there's kind of this mismatch, not only in expectation of
were they publicly traded?
Oh, sure.
Funds?
Yes.
They weren't
yes.
like closed down.
No. Private, yes, non-traded. No, they weren't. They weren't that of that variety. But what's concerning is the perception that the number one, that the investments are relatively conservative, that the income is sustainable through really any and all outcomes, and then lastly, I would say, why is a 9% yield available in the marketplace if what we're seeing in other securities is so much lower?
I mean, if I can go borrow at 3%, why is another security paying 9%?
Correct.
I can borrow money at 3% today, right? So,
right. Yeah. And so you just have to be aware that when something appears too good to be true, if you will, or when something is higher than what the market would suggest, you really need to dig deeper and say, why is this occurring and what are the risks? And maybe it's something that you're comfortable taking on the risk. Maybe for whatever reason, these particular risks don't bother you as much as these other risks over here. Because we're all choosing risks, right? If you keep it all in cash, you're choosing a risk, right? You're choosing inflation risk. You're choosing purchasing power risk. So there's whichever decisions we make, you're choosing a risk either explicitly or implicitly with your decision.
And these funds out there, leveraged, whatever. So these were some open-end mutual funds that you can go
closed
find.
In.
Okay, they're closed-end funds.
Mm-hmm.
But they were...
Or individual securities.
Yielding greater than...
Some of them 10, 12, in the low teens.
So the dividends they're paying out, some of the dividends coming from earnings... Some's coming from cash in the bank.
Correct.
Or having to sell
or borrowing.
Some, or borrowing money to pay out that distribution.
Exactly.
Rate. How long can that sustain itself?
Of course.
And this is the type of thing where people can just go, if someone's just doing a little screen, using some...
Well, and I suspect that's what was done. And so you have this magnification issue of, all of a sudden, let's say the music stops and they can no longer pay out the income stream that they were paying out. So the absolute cash flow drops. So the price of the security of people that maybe are purchasing that security for that cash flow, all of a sudden those people look and go, what, you know, I can't own this investment any longer because of that drop in cash flow. So you get a flood out of that particular investment, as well as the underlying, maybe the cloak being taken back, or the saying the emperor has no clothes, of saying, what is it truly that I own here, and what is the underlying earnings power and dividend payment power, if you will, that exists in the securities.
And these were the type of things that were clobbered during the financial crisis, right?
Oh, absolutely.
It's these.
Well, that, and that's why you saw, and that's kind of dovetailing back to where we started.
That's why I'm surprised they're back.
Right, well.
I guess there's an old saying on Wall Street, when the ducks quack, feed them. I know that sounds harsh, but Wall Street's out there to crank out whatever kind of products people will buy, right? That's what they do. And so when you got some of these leveraged products and stuff to generate this high yields that can't necessarily be increased. So on the fixed income side of things, so as managing the portfolio for Hanson McLean's clients, when you're looking at the fixed income side, I would imagine yield's not your first thing you're looking at.
Correct, especially in this environment right now, because I think that's where you have to, when you're in a situation where the equity market is high, and we can, you know, obviously we led the program saying it's at new highs nearly every day right now, and we can kind of get into,
we'll talk about some, that after the this yeah, break, but that's yeah,
valuation measures, but we're kind of in a environment of not a lot of low hanging fruit out there, and so what the natural desire is to stretch to pick, if you will, that fruit that is a bit higher up on the tree, and maybe you have to get on the very top step on that ladder to pick that piece of fruit, and what happens if you fall? And so the analogy is simply, during times of richness, if we want to call it that, it's best not to stretch to take on risk. You really want to stretch to take on risk when, as we discussed, high yield bonds are trading at a 20% premium to high quality bonds. How often is that witnessed? That's witnessed very rarely. How often do we witness what we're witnessing now in some different asset classes? Fairly rarely on the other side of the spectrum. So you want to stretch to take risk when you're compensated to take risk. You don't want to take a lot of risk when you're not compensated to take a lot of risk. I know it sounds simple, but it's very difficult because it's counter oftentimes to what our normal behavioral proclivities are.
And that's really the environment with which we're in today, right?
Yes.
And that's why I think it's easy for someone to go get sold something.
Oh, definitely.
Either by some products that they've researched online, or by some broker who's trying to make a commission selling them some high yield type product. We got up against a break here. We're taking a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue with David Schauer, Chief Investment Officer of Hanson McLean. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
The financial world is much more complex today than it was a generation ago. It used to be that all one needed to do was park their money in a high-yielding bank account and live off the interest. Those days are no more. With interest rates so low and the world so unsettling, it is now more important than ever that your retirement savings is managed with a focus on both return and downside protection. That's where Hanson McLean comes in. Hanson McLean has been serving folks for over 20 years, helping them achieve their financial and retirement goals. Plus, Hanson McLean Advisors is a registered investment advisory firm with the ability to choose from thousands of investments, both commonplace funds as well as less-known offerings. If you haven't seen what Hanson McLean Advisors can do for you, I encourage you to give their office a call and schedule a visit with one of their advisors. They have offices conveniently located in Roseville, Folsom, and Sacramento. Contact them today at HansonMcLean.com or 1-888-2-HANSON.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson with you. Pat McLean is off today. Pat's in New York City, where he was awarded Thursday night by Investment News. They had their annual Community Leadership Awards, 8th Annual Community Leadership Awards. And Pat was the won the Community Services Award that evening, one of five awards that were given out. And that was the, I think, the capstone of the Community Services Award. for his work with the Sacramento Food Bank and Family Services. I think it was a good spotlight on the food bank, good spotlight for Sacramento. And with that, Investment News is writing a $20,000 check to the Sacramento Food Bank for that as well. So we're very pleased with Pat McLean for his work at the food bank. And I think it was nice to see him honored. He's not, he doesn't like getting honored at all. I've actually been somewhere with Pat. This was an industry thing we had one time. And we were both honored for something. I don't even remember what it was. It was something kind of silly, I think. And he had one of those like crystal looking awards.
Yeah, yes, yes, yes. I enjoy this story.
So it's one of these big banquet rooms and all that. I think at some hotel. And we're walking out. Pat's walking out. And there's a trash can right by the door. He drops it in the trash can. I'm like, Pat, you couldn't even wait till you got home? He's like, I don't know. It's a, it wasn't that significant award. I think there was the type of thing that he obviously did. Wasn't. This is a big deal, and hopefully he'll bring his plaque back with him.
Yeah, he definitely did not want to go back. He wasn't
going to go back. We all talked to you. Got to go back to this thing. You can't. I said you're one of the finalists. Then they asked for some video and stuff. It just made it seem like maybe he's more than a finalist. And, he didn't want to go back anyway. So Pat's back in New York. We're here with David Shower, Chief Investment Officer of Hanson McLean. We've been talking quite a bit about the fixed income market, I think, because there's a lot of misinformation, really, and a lot of misunderstanding on fixed income. And we say fixed income like it's all one market when it's really not.
Everything that we're saying here, it has to be in a generalization because, you know, these are all huge asset classes, and there isn't one monolithic market anywhere. And I don't care if you're talking about the U.S. dollar or whatever it may be, because the dollar is going to change in value relative to a variety of other currencies around the world, a variety of other commodities around the world. So there is no one monolithic market.
So we're talking about the fixed, and of course, I think one of the, we always manage money based on a risk adjusted basis and with a lot of focus on risk, never quite as exciting, particularly in times when when we've seen the markets like we've seen the last couple of years where we haven't seen any big swings, doesn't seem like there's a lot of risk.
I think that's when you have to be more concerned, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I had someone say, hey, Scott, maybe should we increase our equity exposure now because it seems like things are going well.
I get more concerned during those times.
And we're starting to get some of those questions now.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely.
So let's talk a bit about the stock market. What has pushed the prices higher the last few years?
Oh, I think a variety of things. I think higher prices begets higher prices a little bit, where obviously the pain of 2008, as we move further away from it, starts to fade a bit. The desire for greater rates of return start to creep into people's minds. And then you do have, obviously, the profits have done well, although the top line sales
corporate
and
profits.
Whatnot. Yes. And so, I mean, we should probably distill this down to, in the end, prices in all equity securities should directly relate to the underlying earnings of the company over time.
You're taking some cash that you could put a variety of different places, and you choose to put it on into a company or a basket of companies. You might buy an index fund or an equity.
Yeah.
So you choose to buy a company, whether it's Apple or,
you know, I used to
Exxon or whatever it might be.
I find it easy to kind of describe, find it helpful to describe, you know, using something that we all are pretty familiar with in terms of relating how the stock market in general may be rich or it may be cheap or what you're actually buying. And so if you look at owning a gas station, and that gas station owner earns $100,000 a year from that gas station, and we know that ebbs and flows with the price of gas, if you will, and the price of petroleum and so forth and so on. And we kind of were to go into that gas station owner and say, what are you willing to sell this for? We can kind of forecast what we believe to be maybe the growth in that $100,000 that that owner earns, and maybe we're going to put in a car wash, or maybe we're going to add a few pumps, or whatever the case may be. And I think forecasting commodities might be difficult, but maybe we want to build in some sort of inflation adjustments into that that underlying commodity.
So we can build out a model, cash flow model.
Exactly. If you look at different periods in time, that gas station has traded from anywhere from $600,000 to $4 million for that same stream of income over the last 15 years, roughly, maybe $800,000 to $4 million. It's the same stream of income. The gas station hasn't changed, but what has changed over that period of time? Investors' willingness and excitement, or lack thereof, to take on risk or to buy that stream of income. That stream of income has looked very appealing at points in time and unappealing at different points in time. Maybe because all of a sudden the electric car comes out, and so people fear, oh, it's the end of gas as we know it. So there's a fear that creeps in. Then we say, you know what, there's going to be a war in the Middle East. We expect gas to go up greatly. I'm going to build out my gas station to a greater extent. I'm going to expect this to extrapolate into the future. And then we get a 2008 that comes around that takes gas, or oil, I should say, from $140 to $30 a barrel. Prices collapse. I think anytime you have a variability in any sort of underlying stream of income, I think you have to look out over a long period of time and say, what is a reasonable amount of money to pay, if you will, for that asset for a normalized stream of income? So to try and take out the highs and the lows that may occur.
Like maybe just had a couple good years.
Exactly. What would you do? If you're going to buy a business, would you simply look at what is forecasted for that business in the next 3, 4, 5 years? Or would you say, what has been the earnings power of that business over the last 5 years, the last 10 years? What has changed? What hasn't changed? And what can I expect to change in the near future? I think that would be a better, with a greater margin for error, if you will, or margin of safety in looking at the price you pay for a particular underlying business. So you could take that same methodology and apply it to the stock market in general.
So I like that analogy actually with the gas station. So if we look at, let's say the gas station has traded in value of between $800,000 and $4 million.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say $800,000 was back in the March of 2009.
Yep.
And the $4 million was...
March of 2000.
March of 2000, right?
Yep.
At the top of the market in 2000.
Roughly, yep. Maybe a little bit lower, but right. Yeah, right around there.
Okay.
I'm making some generalizations off
understand.
The top of my head.
So, where are we sitting today?
2.6. So I would say probably maybe normalization for that gas station would be 1.6, roughly. 1.8, somewhere in there. So we're definitely above where what you would expect if you normalized, let's say, what that gas station traded for over the last 80 years.
Got it. So because there's lots of different valuations that we can look at the stock
Absolutely.
Market. I mean, price to earnings, price to
yes,
price
yes, yes,
all
yes,
different
yes,
types
yes.
of things. So if we
can, market cap to GDP. We're in a, you know, once again, there's a lot of, yes.
Yeah, how are we sitting as far as market cap?
We're really in the top 6% of valuation from roughly from that measurement. So there is no perfect measurement. There isn't.
Otherwise,
you would corral the world's wealth in a relatively short period of time.
That's right.
I think, but if you look at a suite of metrics,
and if you had the secret sauce, you wouldn't be having seminars across the country that you're selling for $1,000 to teach people how to do it themselves.
Right, you and would, it's Thousand
you would,
Island.
You would corral the
secret sauce is Thousand Island.
You'd corral all the world's wealth in a relatively short amount of time. That's
exactly.
Right.
So I think you could look at a compilation of metrics and say, what is reasonable here? What is being forecast? And let's look at that relative to norms or normalizations. And as you move further from that mean, if you will.
Average.
Yeah. Average. You get out further in the tails and you've. You know, the term black swan has been kind of thrown about quite a bit over the last 6 or 7 years. That simply means as you get further out in more rare type of events, they happen. You should never witness a black swan, but a black swan is actually witnessed. Something that you shouldn't see very often, we're seeing more often than we should. So as we move further out into the tails, so to speak, further out into lower probability situations, you need to have a margin for safety to protect against that.
And so I think what we've seen in the stock market, we've for just about every measurement, where it's higher prices today relative to earnings than we've had at other periods of times, right?
Yes.
Almost every measurement, which is really pricing in that things need to go really well in the economy going forward.
You need to have...
It's priced in that things are going to go well.
Yes. I think at some point you need to have earnings grow at far above trend or far above normal to, in essence, grow into the prices. You need to have maybe prices drift down and earnings grow. And obviously the worst outcome would be earnings actually contract, which almost never gets built into models, right? When you hear about what expectations are for the stock market a year from now, never do you ever forecast or do you see forecasted a contraction. But you know what? They occur.
Yeah, we saw a doozy of one back in the financial crisis. Anyway, David, so much appreciate you taking your Saturday morning and spending it with us.
Riveting, I'm sure.
It's a different kind of program today, but I know that there's many that enjoy getting in a little deeper on some of the stuff. And I know that you spend a lot of your day during the week on these issues. And so thanks for taking the time today and explaining some of this to
great to
us
be here.
All. And, of course, Hans McLean's Money Matters. We broadcast every Saturday from 10 to 11. It's rebroadcast on Sundays from 2 to 3. You can learn more about Hans McLean at our website, hansmclean.com. From there, you can get copies of this podcast and some other great articles and videos and that sort of thing. So feel free to go to hansmclean.com. Enjoy the rest of your weekend, and we will see you next weekend. This has been Hans McLean's Money Matters.
Hans McLean's Money Matters has been broadcast for nearly 20 years with one main goal, to help you make wise choices with your money. And what you hear each week on the radio is the same type of straightforward advice Hans McLean provides to each client each week. Whether you're facing a retirement transition, a 401k review, a portfolio risk analysis, or other financial matter, the advisors at Hans McLean are here to assist you. Their approach is to first listen to you and then help come up with a plan to provide a greater chance of success in achieving your financial goals. Hans McLean is an independent advisory firm that chooses from a wide variety of financial tools that can range from investment products with the brand names that everyone knows to specialty investments that are as unique as your individual objectives. They combine these with years of experience and intensive research to help you meet your specific goals. So if you have yet to see how the advisors of Hans McLean may benefit you, contact them today at 1-888-2-HANSEN or visit them at hansonmclean.com.